the recording. And, oh, and that is the exact second my landlord decides to call, and I'm not going to take his call. All right. Welcome to session two of The Marriage of Serpents. And our card, our visual theme for this time is the spiral. Marriage of Serpents is a game set in the world of Arkoth, which is a game, which is a Bronze Age dark Celtic fantasy world. And Marriage of Serpents is set in a new section of time for that world, where after the God's Fall Wars, where the five kingdoms went at each other with a vengeance and got the gods involved in their conflict in a fatal fashion. And as a result, the dragon that, as in Celtic mythology, is the spirit of the earth, also perished along with the gods and many mortals. And a great cataclysm and sorrow fell across the land. And we're about 10 years past the God's Fall Wars, and the world is just beginning to, or Maur, the continent island of Maur, is just beginning to pull itself back together and have civilization be a reliable force. And we're in the set in the southern kingdom of Tuhal, where there is much magic, but magic is feared and ill-trusted, and the use of it is prescribed and deeply regulated, which has coincidentally resulted in it being the most resilient kingdom to the effects of the God's Fall Wars. Our main characters tonight are, and go ahead and introduce yourself as well as your character.
I'm John Scavone, and I'm playing Kian Gallagher. Do you want us to give like details or just the name, or
maybe a quick little something about your character?
Yeah, he's a Dree, a wizard who normally in Tuhal that would be something that would be carry its own death sentence, but he's found himself bonded to a noble house,
and therefore in their service can practice his magic carefully.
Right.
My name's Dale, and I am playing a being known only as Claiborne. It is apparently a being made of clay and earth and minerals. He appears as a dirty beggar, a vagrant, but upon closer examination, he is not what he appeared to be at first.
And my character is a sort of dual character that are kind of mutually dependent on one another. Oh, my name's Matthew Melville. And I'm playing a dual character that's sort of dependent on each other. And there is Cecile and Sisyphus. Sisyphus being a large... mine's blanking. Surin, thank you, is a large Surin. And we have Cecile, which is a small one. And when they are young, they are small lizard-like folk, somewhat aquatic, live in a swamp. And they're very fast, have genetic memory. As they get older, they get larger and slower and more earth-like. And so we have the large adult that should have returned to the earth. And we have the young... younger one that's crippled in the legs and rides on the other one's back.
Nice. Last time, in session one, the Middle World, we met Kian in the place where he works and sometimes lives, that's known locally as the Tumble Down or the Fall Down. It's a very ancient structure of limestone that failed at some point long ago in the past and sort of tumbled down on itself in pieces. And it stands relatively close to the center of Kerkival, the town, the habitation that this adventure starts in. And it's probably viewed by locals as a place of to be avoided. A place of bad history. And so obviously, it was offered to the bonded foreign wizard for his use and dwelling, should he so wish. We met his ward. He's bonded to House Fain. whose animal is the seagull. And he has been charged with educating in the ways of the world and the basics of perhaps of some of the secrets of the secret world by his father, who bonded Kian, called Mananan O'Fain, and the boy is Mort O'Fain, and he's a quick, clever boy, curious of late middle childhood. We found, as they gathered in the morning, that Claiborne was drawn to their company, and he said that he had come there. Was it following the footsteps that were footsteps? Something like that. And we discovered that at some point in the night, the two Surin had arrived, apparently with the smaller Surin asleep, and the larger Surin had walked there through the night and then drawn a heavy, dirty, rough tarpaulin around them, that having gathered much stain from the travel in the night made him look like one of the many fallen limestones that litter the Fall Down. In their confused and perhaps amusing conversations, in which the boy fearlessly engaged and inquired with these unusual inhumans, an interruption drew them away from their own personal activities in the form of four warriors from the crown, four warriors from the high hill at the center of Kerkival, and they claimed to be there to take Kian and his attendants to see the Tuhal. The Surin begged themselves off, but Kian and Claiborne accompanied the four men, who were each quite a physical specimen of the Fianna Fáil, the great warriors of the kingdom, each obviously chosen as one of the different colors of men, which are red, brown, blue, and yellow. Most of them remained silent, except the ruby, the red leader, Ahoil, who led the two, we'll say men, into the ring fort that surrounds the crown, and into a portion of the ring fort called the Old Wood, where portions of the ancient oak forest that once spanned the plains remains. And in what was a temple of the Night Lodge, they found the youngest son of the Tuhal, the youngest son of House Kuval, named Agrian, accompanied, lounging in a throne that certainly had once been a throne of the High Priest of the Night Lodge, or the High Speaker of the Night Lodge, in the time when there were gods. They found him lounging there in a full wolf's pelt, accompanied by the Tuhal's, one of Tuhal's great formidable persons, Kitamwe the Silent Questioner, who is a Dri Derig, a red mage who wields a Skian Derig. The red mages are also called mage hunters, and their great power is their blades that are quenched in their own blood and flesh, and that can cut magic as easily as a sharp blade cuts flesh. There was a conversation in which Agrian claimed that he was acting on behalf of the Tuhal, his father, because his father's birthday was coming up in a couple of weeks, and he wanted, and his father is very fond of the battles at the Proving Grounds, which vary from the entertaining to the deeply dramatic. And that there was something amiss that was beneath the notice of the mage hunters and above the pay grade of the keepers of the peace, the Gardi Shahana. And so he was charging Kian, since Kian was ultimately a servant of the crown and expendable as a wizard and a bonded wizard and a foreigner. To which Kian responded, "I live to serve," and which grimly Agrian Kuval just nodded as if, "Yes, I know." In a mess and a flurry, the Dri Derig, who is responsible for overseeing Kian, and when he eventually succumbs to the dark powers of his magic and becomes evil and needs to be hunted down and killed, the Dri Derig responsible for doing these things, named Aoife, arrived wearing some much larger man's clothing and looking an obvious mess as from sleep, and demanded to know what had happened to her charge, bustled her way in at the end of the meeting to receive glares of disapproval from Kitamwe and amused smirks from Agrian Kuval, and then the group was dismissed to so that Kian could begin his research without further dallying. And that was the end of episode one. Middle World. Does anybody have any questions from that episode?
I do, actually. So remind me what the exact actual concern about the Proving Grounds was.
It wasn't shared with you.
Oh, it wasn't shared. But there's just something. Did they give us a direction to consult with somebody, or?
No.
Oh. Okay. Familiarly useful.
Yes.
And how far are the Proving Grounds from where we are right now?
The Proving Grounds are to the northeast of the crown of the town center, built probably originally beyond the edges of the spread of Kir Kuval. But now kind of on its edges. And so maybe, you know, like a mile straight shot on the ribbon, which is a builder road. But since being wise, you would not take the builder road anywhere in this day and age. It's probably a little bit longer than that because of hilly ground and soggy fields.
It cut out for a second. Longer than, how long did you say?
It's about a mile and a half. It's not very far away.
And if I recall correctly, the Surin pair were not actually with us in the Night Lodge.
No.
No. They weren't going to go anywhere near all those armed guards and straight into the
straight into the
lion's den.
The center of human power.
Right.
Right.
So they're going to meet you en route to the Proving Grounds. And Sisyphus, ironically enough, is holding a great stone in his arms. And when he greets you, Cecile has him put it down, as that was kind of their cover. People are less likely to ask a Surin what their business is if they're clearly, you know, doing something and holding a great load. People just sort of assume that, you know, that Surin has a place to be.
I remember.
So Matthew, you have started the scene for us. Mm-hmm. And so what time of day is it?
So what time
is it night? No, so, don't ask, just decide.
It is late afternoon.
Okay. And what is something about the environment that your character has noticed?
So I think a big thing right now is that there's the air of bad news circling throughout the city. And nobody's really clear about exactly what it is, which suggests magic. But there's kind of this rushing and just like little hush conversations everywhere, kind of like the wind through trees as bad news travels throughout the city.
All right. I love that. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Based on that, we're going to start with an initial story tag of bad news that you're welcome to call on in your actions, should it be appropriate.
Okay.
It's late afternoon, and the gray blanket the serpent's gray blanket is laid heavy over the world, the sky like a piece of beaten lead, like a sheet of hand beaten lead, irregular muddily silver, extends above you seemingly forever. The horizons, Kerkuval is one of the great places settled in the Five Kingdoms because it's the only place that has vast horizons. Everywhere else in the kingdoms is surrounded by hills and mountains and forests, and so feels small. And so even though Kerkuval is not the city that Yonid, the capital of Faerisha, is, nonetheless, it feels like a vast, expansive place in the middle of the seemingly infinite green, grassy plains of Tuhal. And so the green grass of Tuhal spreads out away from you, looking like old and dirty copper in the long gray light of evening. And as Kian and Claiborne make their way back from a series of small hills to the north and west of the Proving Grounds, back toward the clean blue-white straight line of the ribbon, which remains almost as it was of old as it passes the Proving Grounds. they find the two Surin having just stumped up out of the marshy ground south of the ribbon, up onto the Builder Road, and which seemed to be looking for them. The large one carrying a ponderous sort of gecko speckled piece of massive chunk of limestone, easily in his, in one of its arms. And as he said, as the two of you make your way out of the high grass of the dry hills, he sets the stone down on the Builder Road. And it's just that moment when far to the east at the rim of the world, the sun falls below the leaden cap of the serpent, and a brilliant red gold light, said to be perfect light by the people of the Five Kingdoms, unfurls across the world, banishing the dull copper gray of the grass and making the grass around them and off toward the distance shine and glimmer. And just nearby, the old blue granite, the old chunks of blue granite, finely carved and without any hand marks or chiseling, laid close together and on top of one another, that form the outer bulwark of the Proving Grounds, transform from a sort of gray, hopeless slatiness to a kind of clear, sparkling white edifice, as granite will sometimes take color from the world and seems to contain sparkles when the sun is right, as though it is hewn from the stuff of the firmament, which glimmers with its own light. And go ahead.
Can I go ahead and do the flashback of how I got here? We're at the outside of the Proving Grounds now, right?
Yeah, you're just nearby. Yeah. You can. You don't have to.
Oh, well, I had a thought
that okay.
I to do.
Please do.
At first, while looking for the road, which at the time was a great comfort to travelers because it heralded both safety and security and familiarity, Kian, along with his companions, looked for a thing that was now feared, the workings of the builders that had come before. And as the evening began to approach and the air grew a little bit cooler, there was a faint glimmer of mist seeming to radiate off the ground. And while the road itself, like all builder materials, gave off no illumination other than to show itself, as the tendrils of the serpent's breath crossed the flat plains, the four of them could see a faint glimmer of where the Builder Road used to be, probably just a few hours ago. And under his breath, Kian said, "The land changes, but the serpent gathers around it." And he kind of gestured forward along, not along where the Builder Road was now, but where it had been 2 hours prior. and they followed that trail all the way to the Proving Grounds.
Nice.
Does anybody else want to share something? Because if we're going to get there, I'm going to ask if we see anybody when we arrive at the outer edges of the granite.
So you kind of walk down from the slopes of the little hills nearby, and the Sorin are standing there on the current builder road. And the Sisyphus, the large one, sets down a great chunk of limestone. And they both sort of swivel their heads simultaneously to look at you.
Cecile waves at you in greeting. Human slave wizard, we've returned.
And his brow kind of prickling a little at the term of address. Simply nods upwards and indicates towards his neck. Did you bring the torque? He said.
Yes.
Perhaps not coincidentally.
And I think he kind of, Sisyphus is already wearing his, and Cecile kind of pulls his out. It's old and a little bit dented, but it's clearly a torque.
Well, I'm sure you'll still attract attention, but at least we won't perhaps be burned immediately.
As if in greeting, Clayborne shuffles toward the two reptilian beings and says, "You are important, and I will follow you."
We missed you too, human of Earth. And I think Cecile kind of reaches down and kind of gives Clayborne a pat on the head. Familiarity.
Clayborne, do you step up onto the blue-white surface of the Builder Road?
The large piece of, I think it was limestone, you said, mm-hmm. that the Surin just put down. Mm-hmm. He walks up to that and puts his both hands on it. In doing that, does he step onto the Builder Road?
They wouldn't have to.
Okay.
What is the limestone for?
Well, so that nobody stops us.
Oh.
Nobody asks a certain what they're doing if they're working. Nobody else wants to carry the stone.
It's more important to look busy than to actually be busy. That's very wise.
Yes, I know it was your idea, Sisyphus. Yes, it was a good idea. Okay. Nope, we're going to leave the stone here. Yep.
The large Surin looks longingly at the limestone.
I'm not entirely sure where to start, but... I suppose waiting here isn't going to produce any answers.
Mm-mm.
As if Kian was some kind of wizard whose words were magic. A most remarkable thing happens. There is a small rounded arch not too far away in the outer wall of the Proving Grounds. And the door that blocks it swings wide inward. And a figure and a light emerge together as though they are one thing. And the figure is a large man that looks like a hero of old stories, or that looks perhaps like the god Bel, who everyone knows is dead, revealed. The figure is wearing a long white cloak, and gold glimmers in his curled hair and at his ears and at his wrists and at the torque at his neck. And his strong boots gleam with small filigree work as he stands in the perfect light of sunset, red and gold, just as he is. And it seems that there is a cast to the bloodlight which should color the cloak, but does not. The cloak, unlike his ruddy visage and his hair, remains a pure, clean white in the light. And the figure stops and puts large hands, one to either hip, and turns his slightly craggy bearded face to regard you. The features are thrown somewhat into a soft red shadow so that it could almost be anyone standing there. Or perhaps it could be everyone standing there in the doorway of the Proving Ground. All the warriors that have walked in there. Perhaps they have come together and they're coming back out now. The figure says nothing, which also makes you think of the god Bel, who was said to be of few words when meeting, but many when drinking.
What is the classic position of obstinance by the servile races?
Being dead?
No, I mean...
Sorry, what was the question?
In general, most, if you have like a hierarchical society, then there's usually a visual sign where you represent somebody or you respond to someone with higher status than you do.
Bowing. What?
Okay, bowing, got it.
It'd be a bow or going to one knee.
Okay.
I mean, in an extreme case, like if you really thought that this was the god Bel, you might like, you know, someone might, who was overwhelmed with glory, might like fall prostrate before them, even.
No, that would be really hard on Sisyphus's knees.
Yes.
It would also probably take a very long time.
Well, falling over is easy. It's the getting up that's slow.
So we're just going to give him a nice bow.
Good evening, Kian says guardedly.
Claiborne does not bow.
In a deep and resonant voice, the figure says, "Yes, Grian blesses us kindly before he closes his eye. There's something odd about the way he's speaking." Oh, Dale, you've frozen there for a moment. Oh, dear. Claiborne was so overwhelmed, he just discorporated. Well, I'm sure he'll come back.
To whom do I have the honor of speaking?
You may address me as Chiorna, which means lord, ruler.
Is he wearing anything indicative of nobility or of a house of Tuhal?
You don't see any marks of a house. If if there's a sigil on the cloak pin, it's brass or something, and you can't see it, and because the white cloak is so much more radiant in the setting sun. He is wearing a golden torque and like gold earrings, and so it speaks of wealth. And white clothing speaks of privilege.
Right. And the white clothing, which is eerily reminiscent of the builder structures, does this feel like an optical trick of the light, or does this feel like genuinely magical?
You don't know.
Really? I mean, I am a dree.
You are. Would you like to investigate?
I would like to investigate.
There is certainly something going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kian's nature is to try to figure that out before diving in.
Mm-hmm. So.
Do we lose Dale? Is he in Slack?
His tablet restarted itself, so he's getting back in.
Something odd. Well, yes.
You could stop and conduct a test, which probably would be weird and not go unnoticed.
Sure.
You could try to, you have the eye, right? One of your tags?
No, I have the serpent's breath.
Oh, okay. So you could do some magical effect of your own to try to draw out the truth.
I think I'm learning the system. I don't know if this is the kind of thing that I could do, but I imagine Kian, under his breath, silently utters one of the many charms of making that he's familiar with, and the breath of the serpent that had been gathering behind him creeps forward. So low to the ground and so slowly that it might be very easy to escape.
See, notice. Dale.
Huh. Hey, welcome back.
Thank you. Let's see. Let me try and get this thing back to.
Oh my god.
Oh no.
I'm sorry about the squeaking. Let's see.
Oh, there we are. Kian's just trying to figure out what's about to murder all of us.
So you're susurrusing with the serpent's tongue.
Yeah, and the mist creeping forward at a height so low to the ground and so gradually it might easily escape notice as it kind of crawls up towards his cloak as if trying to grab up and pull information down into it.
Okay, so this sounds like an investigate role. Mm-hmm.
Can I assist in some fashion?
What powers of the serpent do you have, Matt?
I don't really have powers of the serpent, so...
So the most... I mean, if this were a physical action, mm-hmm. you could definitely, you know, do a thing.
Right.
This is something he's kind of doing... a little sub rosa, and so I don't think you could lean in like overtly. And so so a thing you can do as a player is if you have a help point or a hurt point, you could spend it if for him, for Kian. If you have a help point or a hurt point, you could spend it and apply it to this action.
Okay. I do not so.
So, John, tell us what tags you're using for this investigation.
So, under my Path of the Voice, the Breath of the Serpent, I have the voice. Mm-hmm. And so that's one. I think the serpent gathers is two. I don't think the land changes applies, but the serpent is patient, I think, applies because he's waiting. And under my trade craft...
So you can only attack three tags.
Okay, so three.
Is the voice your broad tag?
Yes.
Okay. So typically, you can't use the voice secretly. The way the voice works is that the other person hears you.
Okay. Can I
They might not have to understand you, but they have to hear you. Because the voice has to touch them, which is the way the voice works.
It's fine, John. I think Merrick will be very forgiving.
And I'm by the way, I'm asking these questions not because success is so important, but more just to kind of figure out how flesh things out. Work.
I'm with you.
Could I instead of the voice, could I still do what I'm doing, but instead of the voice, use my perceptive tag from Logos, my tradecraft?
Sure, as long as you have one heroic tag. Right. You have to have a heroic tag to power magic.
But in other words, like, could I still use my serpent gathers and the serpent is patient tag without using the voice?
Yes. Broad
tag. Okay. So I'll use those two tags and my perceptive tradecraft tag.
Okay. Great. So so roll 2d6 plus 3.
Okay. Should I do it in general, I guess?
Yeah. Or you could do it in the secret channel. I don't care.
I'll do it in public. 2d6 plus 3 gave me...
Is...
Oh.
10.
Wait, how did it... Oh, I see. It rolled a 4 and 3 and added 3. So 10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So... on a 10 or higher, your investigation is a success, and you get clues equal to power. And since you use three tags, it's a power 3 move. So you can ask me 3 questions about him that have to do with the mist reaching up and being around his feet and touching his cloak.
Is he... a mortal being?
Yes.
Does he serve Tuhal?
Yeah.
What is his intention being here?
It is not his own.
Okay. That was 3 questions, right?
Mm-hmm. So you said good evening, and he said, yes, Grian gifts us with his perfect sight before he closes his eye.
When he said then, Grian, what is he referring to?
Do I know Grian that? Is sometimes a word for the sun.
Oh, okay.
It, in particular, it's a sort of a personification of the sun, sort of as a god or a being, but it's also just sort of the word for the sun, so it depends how somebody says it.
Have you been waiting here for us? Kian says, now, just now, starting to approach.
I come now as you arrive. I welcome you to this place.
Well, well met. I am Kian Gallagher, bonded to House Fane.
Well met, and welcome unto this place, and may its strong walls be the harbor that you did not know you needed.
It would be rude to not introduce yourself if somebody has introduced themselves to you, right?
Ish. What story do you wear as you come down the hill? Of course, he introduced himself as Charna, which is the appellation that somebody that was like the lord of a dun, or like a dwelling or a fort, would use. So he did technically introduce himself.
Got it. I am here at a request of Cherna Agrian. Agrian? Agrian? How do you pronounce it?
Agrian.
The story is yet unwritten, but I am here to write it.
It is only the Dree. It is only the Dree that speak of stories being written, and how strange it is to the ears, but how pleasant to the turnings of the mind. And you realize one of the problems you're having with him right now is that he's using a weird foreign accent, like an old-timey kind of made-up accent.
Using my kind of tradecraft and the fact that I'm relatively well-traveled, does it seem like it's an affectation, or does it seem like he's like from an out of place?
You'd need to interact with him more. Okay. There's definitely like something is up. Mm-hmm.
Is this your dun?
He looks back and forth between the shining granite walls of the proving ground, and reaches one hand out, and as it's caught by the perfect light of sunset, you can see his hands are rough and stained. Not just by earth, but kind of stained with colors. And he reaches out and places, for large, rough hands, he places his fingertips very sensitively on the surface of the stone, as though it were a wild beast that might start at his touch. And he cocks his head as if listening, his features still caught in the red halo of his hair and his body.
Does anything of this strike me as reminiscent of the dragon?
Yes.
Clayborne snaps to attention when he does that and watches him very closely.
He cocks his head as if he's somehow listening with the tips of his fingers to the white stone.
Can I do an investigation roll?
Sure. What are you doing?
From the tags, I can't mix tags between themes, correct?
You can.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I would like to do...
No, never.
I would like to risk something here. So I'm going to... Okay. I'm not sure if we decide to call it Geodreams or like Dreams of the Earth. But it's a chance to kind of meet him as... What is the concept in this culture of like soul or like inner person?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. So yeah, a meeting of minds.
In fact, everyone has three souls.
Okay.
And it's like the soul of the body.
Okay.
Then kind of the like sensate soul, like the inner sensation, and then like the life spark.
Okay, so it's more of a life spark thing. But there's kind of this I'm not going to be aggressive about it, but using that tag to kind of pull him, to sort of invite him into this dream state to some extent, the inner spark. And I also wanted to do, I wanted to try and use the dragon's children's respect me. And the Surin are always welcome.
Tell me why, how does Surin are always welcome apply?
Just the idea that the Surin in general are non-threatening. No.
That doesn't seem to quite fit. So no. you're sort of reaching out to kind of like draw in his dream, sort of like his kind of soul state dream world that he's in at the moment. Is that what I'm getting? And so what was the first tag? Sorry, it's one of your hero tags.
Yes. So it's under my divination's power, and that's like Dreams of Earth.
Dreams of Earth. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. I'm great with Dreams of Earth. What was the second one?
The Dragon's Children Respect Me.
Great. Love it.
And then, except we're going to look this one up a little bit more because I had the Heart of the Dragon, but we were going to delve into that more, and I don't think we did. Because I remember that was a modification of one of the generic powers from the system. Mm-hmm.
So I would ask, you can have one broad tag or one generic tag. Is that it? Because like Heart of the Dragon could be like anything.
Right.
Anything you do could be Heart of the Dragon, you know, like Brave. You know, Brave is like, and I'm Brave. Sure, you're reading the manuscript bravely. Why not? You know. Yeah.
Sure.
So one of the benefits.
One, and then I'll change. I had another one that was the big one, which was the ambition. So I'll change that one in the future.
Okay. Great.
Okay.
Alrighty. I love it. Any hurt or harm points? Anybody want to stop? John, you've invoked the power of the serpent. You would naturally be right to use a harm point to stop the power of the dragon.
Yes, I do have the weakness susceptible to the serpent.
Which, by the way, John, the power of the dragon will probably fuck up your magic.
Oh, yes.
Oh, good.
Not that there's a dragon or anyone has its power.
Right.
But.
Dragon's dead. No one has to worry. It's all safe.
So do we have a hurt points or?
So at the end of last session, we geeked out during the credits and we did harm or hurt to see if anybody felt they had harm or hurt. And I
did write.
You guys wrote that down in your character sheets.
I have plus one hurt, but I forgot to who. I think it was probably Matthew's character.
Probably.
Probably for that reason. Would it be a good, sure, why not? Let's use it.
Go ahead and mark it off. Matthew, what is the weakness of the pillar where the dragon's dreams come from?
There's two of them.
Okay. And what are they?
So these are both probably, one is susceptible to the serpent.
Okay.
And the second one is beacon. As in, when I use it, it is visible for a long way off.
Yes.
So people notice I'm using magic.
So I'm going to tap susceptible to the serpent.
Okay.
And so as Sisyphus settles underneath you and on some level begins to breathe with the granite, with the blue granite, which, by the way, is white. Of course. Of course, Sisyphus is fine, but as Sisyphus settles, it's like his presence around you diminishes, and the air just feels like a deathly chill, like you were standing on the shore in the face of a storm coming. So it's 2d6 plus 2.
Okay.
But if you succeed, we'll add an attention to your dragon dreams.
Okay.
If you succeed with a 10 or higher, we'll add an attention to your...
So I do forward slash roll, and then do I put in the D, the 2d6?
Yeah, yeah. Forward slash roll, 2d6 plus 2.
I'm just going to do that, make sure it goes through.
By the way, using a help or hurt, that is the player doing it, right? Kian is not in character trying to...
I'll have to do this on my computer because I don't have a plus really useful. My phone. Okay, so that would be a 7.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so because you failed, I'm gonna invoke a storyteller move, and I'm gonna have the magic go awry.
Okay.
In the following way. So as Sisyphus settles places his forearms gently against a nearby outcropping of stone from the proving grounds, the mist that was barely visible around the figure suddenly explodes outward from him, like the violent birth of a storm, and you all see like shooting away from the figure your serpent's mist. Kian takes life and expands in roiling coil upon coil, so thick and suddenly that it seems that someone has reached out and pushed the sun below the horizon, so that darkness, gray blue darkness, falls around you all, and the coiling edges of the mist rise up and form what looks like the beginnings of a dome, as though once long ago the proving grounds were covered in a vast pearlescent dome, and all of the light fails around the figure, and you see him as though there are two people standing there. There is one kind of confused looking scraggly figure in like sort of humped down in a patchwork gray cloak, made green at the edges by time and the grass, and then behind him is a tall, barely discernible shadow figure that isn't entirely human, but seems to be have a hand behind him, as though the human figure were a shadow in a shadow play.
Or a puppet.
But this is more like as though the human figure were a projection of something out of the mist.
Do we all see this?
You all see this. And then a sort of a chill runs through the air, and the mist all just sort of goes back into the earth. And the light clears. And in fact, the sun is falling into the distant sea, and it has fallen beyond the far lip of the proving grounds. And you see the man standing there much as he was, but not as you just saw him, but he's much diminished. You can see that the earrings at his ears and the torque at his throat and the gleaming at his wrists are all too much for Dale to take. No, are all bronze, and none of them are gold. And that his hair is as much gray as it is sort of yellow flame red. And it's not so much like the wild braid of a warrior as the slightly kind of unkempt mat of someone who doesn't take good care of themselves. The only thing that remains of him that's sort of rich and colorful still are his eyes, that now in the kind of blue-gray light of the gloaming, with the distant red-yellow of sunset still on the far fields, his eyes are a sort of brilliant and wild, a kind of seafoam green. He sort of turns slowly and looks at his hand on the there on the granite and then flinches his hand back. That's never happened before. You should watch out for that lintel, he says, pointing at it with both hands.
You said that he emerged from a structure?
He's standing in the doorway of the Proving Grounds.
Is the Proving Grounds
open? So it is. Have you seen the Colosseum, the Roman Colosseum? Mm-hmm. So imagine the Colosseum being just one story.
Okay.
And being built of big kind of seamless blocks of granite, mm-hmm. or not seamless, but big blocks of granite just kind of shoved together. And you know how there are the occasional arch in the lowest story of the Colosseum.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that. There's an arch, and then there's a big heavy door that's open behind him.
Wood, bronze.
It's big timbery wood.
Okay.
Yeah, it would be an insane amount of bronze to make a door out of it.
Yeah, it would. It would be super expensive. So the Cern are going to approach in greeting.
He sort of kind of blinks and looks up at you.
Well met. We are Cecile and Sisyphus.
You mentioned earlier that you made an offer that this would be the shelter that we didn't know we needed. Was that an offer of hospitality?
Of course.
And Kian kind of just looks at him expectantly.
He kind of blinks and sort of looks back and forth.
Would you like
very... late in coming. There isn't a show today. Well, he sort of nervously kind of fumbles his sort of stained sausagey fingers together.
That's all right. We just want to look around.
Oh, right.
Could you show us?
Oh, well, Jesus Christ. Well, this is the lintel to be avoided. And this is the door. And then there's the steps. And he sort of smiles like he's been helped. Oh, I don't think I gave you my name. I apologize. It's Tariga. And you know that you would know that Tariga is a high Farisha word meaning touched. And it also means crazy.
Gotcha.
And it's almost certainly not his name.
Oh. But does he offer it as if like that's what people call him?
Yeah.
Okay. But touch could mean like divinely touched too, right?
Yes. That is also one of the ways that's used.
Okay. Well met, Tariga. Or one more time.
Tariga.
Tariga.
So Kian's, I think, first thought is that, you know, some being was puppeting him,
mm-hmm.
or at least taking in was present in his body. And I think looking around, I would like to see if there's a way for me to draw out whatever presence was there or see if it's gone. Can I do an investigation using the voice?
With the sun setting and the light no longer upon him, and whatever the fuck just happened having happened, this feels like an empty glass.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what I figure out when Kian begins Hail. Chanting darkly, and the mist kind of roils up from the ground and begins encircling all of us, and then just dissipates and nothing happens.
Actually, I think the mist doesn't even really rise.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm back.
Okay, awesome.
Welcome back.
Connection problems. I just shut down everything on my computer.
Yay.
Poor computer. So he steps back, and beyond him you see the proving grounds. So it's have you ever seen a ring fort, like a Celtic ring fort? So it's basically like earth and bulwark ramps that kind of rise up, you know, and they're sort of this is basically one of those in reverse. So there seems to be, so the proving grounds are, there's a big bulwark of blue granite, and it's sort of like, it continues one more level or part level inside. So there's sort of an outer wall, and then there's sort of an inner half step down, which you would all know, well, maybe not Claiborne, but the rest, the other two of you, three of you, would know. It's typically where people sit, is on the kind of the granite wall, unless it's very cold. And then there's sort of a wide ring of grass with kind of edged by limestone, and there's another kind of layer down. And then there's a bottom layer that's sort of grass and mud and some sandy area. And just kind of a big open circle. And then from that bottom level, then there's a couple of archways that kind of go back into the earth.
Okay.
Was that totally confusing?
I've been to the Greek theater recently.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds similar to what you're describing.
Amphitheater with...
Yeah.
In Berkeley.
Yeah. It's sort of like that.
Okay, cool.
All right.
So he steps back, kind of revealing the proving grounds within.
Is he still wearing a torque?
He is, but it's brass.
Is it a torque of servitude?
Yeah.
Do I recognize servitude to what?
It's kind of the generic, like wolf's tooth of Kuval. So if you actually serve House Kuval, you know, the Tuhal, it's a wolf's head. But if you just kind of work for the city or something, it's just like a wolf's fang. It's a canine fang. So it's that.
Kian says, Taraga, what do you live here? What is your role here?
Oh, I'm the head entertainer. And you realize probably what he means is that there are comedic sections of the fights where either people are put into wicker men and burned for their crimes, or people are wrapped in cloth and bundles and stuff, and some of the lesser warriors sort of enact a fake battle and beat the crap out of them.
Oh.
Comedic.
Yes, comedic.
Okay.
But he's the head entertainer.
We heard that there's been strange things happening here at the proving grounds.
Well, a more haunted place you won't find. He says, smiling.
Can you tell us more about that?
As he says that, on the other side of the proving grounds, inside one of the dark hallways, a flame kindles to life. Well, my favorite is there's a mother and a child who, when Brugon is in the sky, search for each other. But one can go no lower than the limestone, and the other cannot rise onto the granite, so they can never find each other.
That is very sad.
Oh. Yes, I suppose it is. Sorry.
And who else is there?
Well, there's Odair. And he dresses up as one of the mudmen and often terrifies the workers.
I glance over at Claiborne.
Did you say mudmen?
Is that you, Odair? Well, this is your most cunning disguise yet. I hardly recognize you. Where have you been?
On the ground, for the most part.
That would explain the dirt.
Do you know who that is? And I, Cecile points over at the lit candle over in the distance.
Oh no, that's a fire. Fire. It burns.
Who lit the fire? Are you alone?
Oh. Simply isn't a good idea to leave me here on my own. I mean, yeah. What was the question?
More of a statement. I think you should come with us. We're gonna explore.
Oh.
If that's okay with the Dree.
Are we looking for something? I feel like I should be looking for something. I feel like I have been looking for something. I wonder if it's my memory. That would explain a great deal.
Can I interject with a flashback?
Sure.
Is that okay with you, Matt and Dale?
Yeah. Yep.
I'm imagining us actually having just emerged from the Night Lodge and Aoife in a state of disarray. Wearing, by the way, I'm assuming that's Seoshin's clothes.
It's almost certainly Donis's clothes, yeah.
Donis's?
Mm-hmm.
And I pull her aside.
She whirls and pulls you aside.
We pull each other aside, I think almost simultaneously losing our balance because we were both ready for the other person to stand their ground. I mean,
honest Quash, be careful.
I know the sun rose a little early for you, but I mean, it's kind of hard to mistake your clothing for Donis's. Or did you change tailors? You should probably look into that.
I like things a bit roomy, is all. What the fuck are you doing here?
I was about to ask you the same thing about myself.
This isn't gonna... All right, I'm a little hungover. Hang on. Right, yes. I have no fucking idea. Was that the silent questioner in there?
You would know her better than I would.
Well, she questioned you, not me.
She's your boss.
Not really.
Oh, should we go inside and ask her?
No. What are you doing? Wait a minute. Was that Adrian Kival?
Wow, you really must have... You must be very hungover.
You are correct. These boots are really uncomfortable. What the hell is going on? And oh, hello, Cleaborn.
You have them on the wrong feet.
Oh my Christ on a cracker. She backs out of them in bare feet, kicks one to the other side, and then stumps back into them, kind of squishing her feet way forward in the two large boots so they stay on. Thanks for that.
I think that whole time Kian is just patiently twiddling his thumbs.
You are welcome, because it is difficult for humans to change the shape of their feet.
Bunions aside, I believe you're completely correct. All right, so what's going on?
I was going to ask you the same thing. Basically, what I've learned is that Adrian Kival is a bit of a...
Don't.
Anyways.
Don't.
Anyways. I understand he wants me to do something, but has there been any rumors about the Proving Crowns? I've been stuck at House Fane for the last several weeks.
I don't understand how he knows your name.
Well, Kitamwe was right there, so it seems like that's...
Well, it's not like you're the only... Sorry, you said something about the Proving Crowns.
Well, I don't know if you heard in there, but we're going to the Proving Grounds, and he didn't even tell me what he wants me to look into, and I'm asking if you've heard of anything. I've been at House Fane privilege. This entire time. I'm sorry?
I said, privilege.
Well, I'm happy to exchange places with you anytime. I say, chafing at my torque.
Well, there's one way to do that, and it's in the afterlife. Plus, I don't think you can handle being this devastating gorgeous. So,
Donis seems to manage.
All right. Proving grounds. Yes, closed.
Closed?
Yes.
Why?
I don't know. For the season, something. Who cares?
Well, I do, because I'm going there.
Well, that's a problem for you then, isn't it?
Right. Well, I guess if I get myself killed there, they'll save you moving your ass.
That would be so considerate. Honestly. I mean, I don't want you to go out of your way on my account. But...
He just tilts his head and says, I live to serve, as he walks right by her.
Oh my god. Yeah. Watch out for the builder road out there. It's been extra weird.
Somebody have a knock?
That was a cat.
My cat is investigating a paper bag that's sitting near me. Mm. Cats occasionally will.
And so you're welcome to have one additional clue about the... So you're welcome to have a clue about the proving grounds if you'd like to ask me a question about them.
Yeah. Why were they closed? I understand that you're going to run that through a thing, but that's the question.
There was a relatively big monster fight scheduled, and it was canceled abruptly too much need for guardians of the peace to come out and disperse the crowd which had gathered to enter.
Oh wait, so there was a monster fight scheduled.
Mm-hmm. And it was canceled. And when people showed up at the beginning of day, which is ironically sunset, the people there said, "Nope, been canceled."
It was canceled day of.
Yeah, we're closing for a little while. Renovations.
And when did that happen? Can I ask that?
A couple weeks ago.
Okay.
That's not suspicious.
No, totally normal.
And so back at the Proving Ground, I think Kian walks a circle around the center of the arena.
That's a good idea, Sisyphus. And I think Sisyphus just goes down and gently picks up Terriga and just gently kind of puts him on his back.
Okay.
And we'll follow. Cecile kind of gives him a pat on the back. You are safe with us.
And possessed of a new and commanding view.
Yes.
I make my way counterclockwise around the arena towards the lit torch.
Wintershins?
Wintershins, yes.
Okay. There's a few kind of areas that have been carved in that are sort of large steps. And okay, so you descend anti-clockwise against the sun for some reason. You do, in fact. And looks like there hasn't been much going on here. The proving ground itself, the big circle in the middle. The grass is a bunch of very green new grass that's grown, growing up in the muddy areas, and the rest of the grass is kind of standing up straight and hasn't been kind of trampled by traffic or practice or anything.
I'm looking closely at the torch itself.
Okay. As you kind of make your way down and you can sort of see fully in, it's a little difficult to see. You can see that the archway and the little tunnel that leads back from the proving ground is kind of cobbled stone put together in a little arch, and there's a bronze torch bracket that somebody has set lit reeds in the wall, and it's sort of burning with the kind of yellow red gleam of burning reeds. And you can't quite make it out, but it looks like there's either like a pile of rags, but probably not. Or like somebody kind of hunched down a few paces back from there, maybe sitting on something.
Where's Claiborne?
And it looks like you can't quite tell. But it looks like the passage goes back, and there's maybe like a back wall. So like then there are passages sort of off to each side. And Claiborne is...
I'd like to ask a question clarifying the nature of the structure. I mm-hmm. believe you said it's basically granite blocks above and mm-hmm. down into limestone below.
Yeah, so the outer wall, there seem to be like two outer walls, one inside the other and down below. The outer walls are big, kind of partly spherical, you know, or curved, smooth, big granite stones just kind of set together.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one set that forms the outer wall, and then there's another set that forms like a lower inner wall. Yes. But then the next big step down into the center and into the proving grounds is kind of reinforced with big limestone cobbles around the edge.
So I imagine limestone is a fairly it's not a strong stone.
It's not, and it's porous.
It's fairly porous. Mm-hmm. And so there are probably some areas of like gravel and sand that have come from the limestone. Naturally, there's like areas of rubble.
Sure. The place is actually, the limestone's actually really well maintained. And so there would probably be some lumps of sand and things like around the edge, right? Maybe up against the wall, maybe shoring it up a little bit or something. But there wouldn't be like a lot of decay. So it's not a ruin. This place is not a ruin.
Okay.
So yeah, there could be some little patches of like limestone grit or little piles of like where some of the stones have broken and they've kind of piled them up at the base to reinforce the wall. But it's basically like there's the big granite outer walls, and then there's a grassy area, and the limestone basically keeps the mud of the grassy area from being and forming a right. slope down into the center.
Right. So Claiborne is going to wander apparently aimlessly around mm-hmm. the limestone area, and wherever he finds limestone that has fallen loose or formed a pile of sand or gravel, he reaches down and gathers it up in his two hands. And then he finds another and reaches down and gathers it up in his two hands. And okay. he just keeps doing that. He never seems to be putting it anywhere, though. And yet he always has hands free to gather more.
Okay.
So that's all I'm doing for now.
It's not from around here.
Mm.
The limestone.
How does it taste?
Oceany.
Mm.
What are we looking for on our adventure? Is it monsters? I feel like there are monsters. There should be monsters.
That's right, Sisyphus. There are always monsters.
This has been kissed by the serpent.
Oh.
I turn towards Sisyphus and Taraga seated on top of him. I'm given to understand that there were actually supposed to be monsters, that this place was canceled before a fight.
You live between the touch and the sea, sir, Taraga says to you. And you realize that he's making also a little joke, because touched and sea in High Farisha rhyme, Targa and Farga, mm-hmm. which are the touched and the sea.
That's not a joke. That's far better. That sounds like a pun.
Could be. It's a little rhyme. It's okay. A little something.
Because if it's a pun, then it's art.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Then it's dooming you to hell. What?
I didn't say it was good art. I just said it was
so
art.
So Targa says to you, do you live between the touched and the sea? The Targa and the Farga?
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, perhaps understanding is overrated.
Sometimes, usually, it beats the alternative. But not always. Hmm.
You are one of the wise.
What happened here? The day that they canceled the Proving Grounds.
Oh, thank you, because that first one was going to be a really long story. Oh, well. Things went missing. Monsters and such. You understand.
The monsters went missing?
Hard to have a monster show with no monsters. And although my lobster is both famous and impressive, doesn't always please the crowds.
Where are the monsters kept?
Mostly in our hearts.
Before they fight.
He just kind of blinks at you like, what?
Are there cages? Are there pens?
Absolutely.
And those are?
Terrible.
Are there any remains, Paul, on the field?
No.
Are there any remains of anything?
No, just grass.
So they're very good at cleaning up like the blood and the gore and all that. There's no.
Yep.
That would be hard.
And probably the grass is quite so thick and happy looking because it gets fertilized.
How do they keep it like clean though?
That's a good question.
All right, I'm going to ask him.
Okay.
The Romans had the sand and they would rake it and like pull out the dirty stuff and like replace it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. How do you keep the sod clean?
Mont.
You douse it with mud?
If you look carefully, you can see we have a, well, there are two great cisterns underneath us. And if you look closely, you can make out two soft circles in the limestone, and they're sluice gates that we can uncork. And so you bring a bit of mud down, and what lies below us is thirsty.
It's thirsty.
I understand. And Claiborne walks to the edge of the arena where the great granite blocks begin.
Mm-hmm.
He puts his hand at the base, hit both hands at the base of one of the granite blocks,
mm-hmm.
and pushes his hands upward to the upper edge, and then climbs on top and drags his hands onto the top of it. And where his hands have been is a thick layer of what looks like stucco.
We should hire you for advertisements.
So I'd like to see where they unstop it and go to the cisterns beneath.
Okay.
And check that out.
Do you go over to the kind of the low limestone wall where he indicated?
Mm-hmm.
And you can see, yeah, there's kind of a slightly off cluster of the limestones that are set into the earth. And one of them is in the center is sort of especially kind of round looking. And as you get close and kind of fiddle with it, you can see that in fact, as you sort of brush back, there's a little bit of brass showing. And you play with it a little bit and you see that, oh, it's some kind of like a screwed in cap.
Okay. We're going to unscrew it then.
Okay. It's only about this big.
Okay.
So in case you were thinking it was like a way you could go, it's
no, not. No. Just opening it and kind of looking down into what I imagine is the darkness below.
Okay. As you start unscrewing it, water begins seeping out and kind of running in little rivulets from behind the cap.
Okay.
So it's clear there is a pent-up force of water behind the cap.
Be careful.
I'm going to call over the Dree.
Okay.
To come look at it.
How like forceful is the water pent up behind it?
You're not sure. It's certainly somewhat significant, since even by unscrewing a little bit, there's little rivulets of water running down the wall.
So what is this?
What you notice that's interesting is that as the water runs down the wall, it doesn't like pool out along the grass. It just sort of disappears kind of into the earth and the little bits of limestone at the edge of the center circle. And yeah, I'm sorry, you're asking what is the cap? What?
So the cap is connected to a cistern? Did I hear that right?
That's what he said, yeah.
Does it seem apparent just by looking at it that that's the case?
Well, I mean, it's a cap in a wall, and there's obviously some kind of brass something there, and
but a cistern is like a container, right?
Uh huh.
So the cap is connected
typically to the earth.
Oh, okay.
And so somewhere behind this wall, there is a reservoir of water.
I see.
Then I want to check out a little bit of the ground where the water is disappearing. Can I part some of it? Can Zvis part some of it with his fingers?
Yeah, sure. Or Sisyphus sort of. Sisyphus, if Sisyphus does it, then he just kind of reaches down and his big craggy fingers sort of curl in, and then he just pulls, and you realize that the grass is turf laid over something else. Okay. So he sort of peels back the edge. Mm-hmm. And you realize that it's possible that the whole proving ground in the middle is some kind of like mossy substrate that grass is growing in and on.
Mm-hmm.
And as he pulls it back, you can see there's layers and layers of crushed blue-green limestone underneath.
So like sort of sandy where you can kind of like reach your hand and like... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the water just like goes right through it.
I think Kian places his hand on the cap.
Mm-hmm.
And the water rivulets go down the side of the wall, but some of them actually begin crawling up his arm.
Mm-hmm.
And he begins...
Perhaps in little silver sinuous strands?
Yes. And he begins very quietly chanting in that same unfamiliar ancient tongue from before.
It doesn't normally do that.
I'm trying to do an investigate, and I'm trying to detect anything weird in the waters traveling, as if he mentioned a thirst. Is something pulling the water into the earth? Where's the water going? Is something strange in the water's path as it kind of, and the way I'm doing that is the water is like it's falling because of gravity and because of the pressure, but because he's made contact with it and because the serpent is water, it's also going down his body and into the earth. And so he's kind of, he's becoming part of that channel, and mm-hmm. then trying to, which dangerous probably, but also embodying kind of that and trying to learn about it.
Oh, I hope you roll really low. I mean, oh, yay. How exciting. Oh, the places you'll go. Oh, the things you'll know.
And that's how he died.
So what of your tags are you tapping for this?
So
by the way, Matthew, Adri in Tuhal like openly performing magic, even in front of someone like Terega, whatever right. that is.
Someone no one would actually believe.
This is you know that this is dangerous.
Okay.
Me. He doesn't seem concerned, though. Obviously, wise is only a title.
I'm using the voice. The serpent gathers. And the serpent is patient.
What's your weakness?
The serpent's rage. And the serpent is hard to control. Oh, no. The serpent's rage is hard to control is one of them. And the other one is the serpent is mercurial.
I'm going to invoke the weakness, the serpent is mercurial.
Okay. So am I still rolling though?
Yeah, 2d6 plus 2. And if you get a 10 or higher, you'll get an attention on your... Way of the voice tag.
Plus two. Come on, 10 or higher. Oh, fuck.
Yes! Yay, failure!
Oh.
Oh, no. Oh, it usually doesn't do that either.
So, the Yes.
I may be able to be helpful in a way here because of what Claiborne just did. He's at the moment very thirsty. And so if you can work that into what's about to happen, please feel free.
Save kid.
So the silver strands flow up his arm like racer serpents from the like racer snakes from the garden, but instead of emerging from the bottom of his kilt, they come up from the tunic, from his tunic, and enshroud his face in complicated silver knotworks, and form a sort of a crown of six peaks on his head. And he steps back and turns around, and the rivulets of water, as he turns, Claiborne, you can see that, that the rivulets of water coming out of the earth have become kind of the scaled body of a serpent, and that its mouth like has him in its back, or its mouth has his back, you know, like it's biting his back.
And this has John's character?
Yeah. And he
turns. Do we see that?
Oh, yeah. It's physically happening. And he turns to look at you, and his eyes have gone a chalky, luminescent blue-white. You realize that his mouth is, he's still like muttering whatever this charm is. But the cunning coils of water form another mouth in front of his and say, this water is not yours to take. It is mine and I will have it back. And then the water around him shivers, and Claiborne, you sort of lean forward thirstily, and then think better of it, and lean back onto the granite. meanwhile, Sisyphus, you get a very, or Cecile, you get a very, again, that the chill feeling. And then somewhere in the distance, there's a sort of a crack, like stone breaking. And then the water begins to lift off of his body in drips and drops. And from his body, the water begins to rain upward toward the sky. And then the water coming that was making the serpent holding his back begins to rain upward. And then the rivulets of water coming out of the cistern turn and begin running up the stone. And then suddenly there's bright water coming out of the green, out of the lawn in the center of the proving grounds, and out of the upper lawn. And then it's a deluge upward out of the earth into the sky. Water is just fountaining out of the earth, but as rain would fall on a heavy day out of the sky. And it's just...
Surian looked thoroughly miserable.
He did it.
He did it. Yeah. That one did it.
Oh, over there?
It was him.
Okay, there. I'm not sure how the squares are arranged for the rest of you.
because of your connection together, I'd like So Cecile, I need you to resist getting pulled off of Sisyphus with the rain.
Okay. I think that Sisyphus would help me because I have the power tag of one mind. Sure. So I think he can kind of communicate very quickly, like, grab me.
Yeah.
Help! And then...
So this is a move called Face Danger.
Okay.
When you're using your abilities to resist a malign influence.
Okay. And then I think Heart of the Dragon, because this is kind of our old ancestral enemy. But I could also see you tagging my weakness susceptible to the serpent.
I'm not going to tag it, but you can if you want.
Why would I do it specifically?
Because if you do, once a session, if you tag a weakness and you succeed, you can mark attention on that pillar.
Okay.
And attention is kind of experience points.
Okay.
Kind of, sort of.
Cool. So
we're making up for the no rolling last time.
Am I out of this?
You are.
Okay.
Thanks for rolling low, John. I appreciate that.
You're so welcome.
Alrighty, so you have an 8 plus 2 is 10?
Yeah.
All right, great.
Was it just like the rain that was kind of pulling me up, or was there any like personification of the spirit of the serpent that we were aware of? Okay, so what happened is I think like all the rain was coming and they were shielding, and Cecile was up there, and I think like some of the rain kind of formed together and like covered his mouth so that he couldn't like scream, and it started to pull him up. And grandfather,
almost like a coil around the neck.
Right. So he couldn't like, and then I think Sisyphus, having their bond, like notices and just kind of comes up slowly, but just sort of brings it around and like severs the serpent and just like grabs his grandson and holds him close.
Okay.
And he echoes something that would probably be difficult for the Dree to understand, but I think Clayborne understands. I think you understand Sisyphus, kind of the language of Earth.
Yes.
So you hear, you hear the Earth abides, and what the Earth has claimed, the serpent will not take. Mm-hmm.
And I will take that idea and replenish my own fluids.
Uncannily, the deluge rises in fervor and then ends in a snap. And the water does not fall back out of the lead gray sky.
Did we make a cloud?
Maybe. So remember, there was the big, a permacloud, sort of lead gray layer up above, that only the sun fell below because it was falling off the edge of the world. I mean, is setting into the infinite. Dark of
Sisyphus
night.
Kind of goes down on all fours and just shakes. Not unlike a dog. Kind of just sprays.
A few pieces of limestone go flying.
Yeah.
during the deluge, Terega was kind of blown off of Sisyphus's back, but unlike Cecile, he wasn't, nothing tried to lift him into the sky, and so he just kind of splorted into the mud, or into the grass. And he rises and sort of looks, and kind of obviously in preparation to be like, oh, the horror. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of with a face set in, oh, the horror, he kind of that's the most remarkable bath I've had in quite some time. How am I dry?
Paul, the images that I sent of Claiborne's various, the various images of Claiborne, one of them is very, very smooth and kind of noble looking. Any way you can bring that up?
How did you send them to me? Not in Slack. Oh, that's the wrong.
Yeah, they're in Slack in characters, I think.
Oh, in characters, right. Yes. A moment, please. Fucking fun. Oh, yes.
This is what Claiborne looks like now.
Ah.
The 06 one?
I like it.
Yes.
Smooth and clear-edged and clean.
And wearing a toga, apparently. Or a kilt.
Is Kian...
Kian returns to himself as a voice cuts through the proving grounds. Well... In a place of uniques and firsts, that was certainly one of the more memorable. And you look, and there's a gray, patchy, a slightly paunchy. Pantry standing in the shadows of the archway where the flame is. One ear is pretty much gone. The other ear has a big kind of gold cabochon earring in it.
Do I recognize the pantry?
No.
Okay.
Oh, I mean, this could be your dude. But I wasn't thinking it was.
I don't think so. He doesn't get around as much.
Yeah.
I just know some of the pantry in the area.
He's regarding you with a kind of slightly tilted back head and a narrowing of pale gray eyes.
Okay. Get a little salute of like, not submission, but as like one... equal might like greet another.
He nods to you.
Acknowledgement.
Question, the water from the cistern, is it still coming out?
No.
Or is it all empty?
Well, the plug is still basically in place, so you're not sure. That's not true. You know all the water is gone.
That's what I thought. I think Kian kind of looks over at the cap, and despite already knowing that, knocks twice on it and it's completely hollow.
Yeah, you hear. And if you check your Slack chat, you know something else too.
And he then turns it and seals it again and turns around.
Okay.
So.
Oh, this is our, he's our, what do you do here again? Caretaker. This is our caretaker, Rat.
Rat? Mm-hmm. R-A-T?
Yep.
Well met. Perhaps.
Do I know what was speaking through me?
No.
No.
Can we guess that it was the dragon?
The dragon is dead.
Yeah.
Or sorry, not the dragon, the serpent.
I figured if it was a serpent, I would know. So if I don't know.
The dragon isn't usually a spirit of a lot of water, though.
No, that would be the serpent.
Right. I guess it could be some variation of the mist, but the mist doesn't usually interfere like that, right?
The mist has become unpredictable.
Right, right.
But manifesting as like the serpent that was biting him from behind, mm-hmm. that's probably the serpent.
Yeah.
The mist usually doesn't masquerade as one of the scalies.
Right. That's why Sisyphus called it out.
It does take me a moment to recompose myself. But I did warn you. True.
Greetings, Rat. If we could ask some questions of a child of the forest and of the plains.
It's been a long time since then.
The Earth remembers.
Oh, you're from the swamp. How come you're still wandering around?
He says, yeah. Obviously turning his attention to Sisyphus.
And what Sisyphus says is, because I've not yet found what I'm looking for.
Well, I hope it's not here.
Why is that?
Well, I mean,
with slightly yellow, ragged-looking claws, he sort of gestures up and down the sides of Sisyphus.
Well, I mean,
he's correct. We're also glad it's not here.
Did that come with you?
He says, pointing at Claiborne.
Yes.
Claiborne is gesturing off toward the blocks of granite where he had done the plastering work.
Mm-hmm.
Up the side and onto the top. Did that survive the deluge?
You tell me.
It would have been in a muddy form, like unset plaster. And so it probably would have been washed away to some extent.
So I think maybe on the vertical surface, because the rain came up out of the grass.
Right.
Okay. But then on the horizontal surface, no rain came down and nothing came out of the granite.
Okay.
So I think maybe on the top, it's fine, but maybe it washed away off the vertical surface.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going to go and bend down and restore what I did.
Okay.
Are you trying for an early pyre, wizard?
He says, just kind of gesturing to the three of you.
I take a step away.
I suppose that would warm you up. You look a little chilled. Blue, in fact. Maybe it's the light.
I brush my fingers against the grass. I'm wondering if the grass is now all brown. And like, did the water come out of the earth? Is the earth now dry?
Actually, the like all the water came up through it, and so the grass actually looks like clean and standing tall and healthy.
Huh. Okay.
Like grass after a heavy rain. After it kind of stands back up.
Yeah. Oh,
sorry, I missed that, Dale. What was that?
Almost like somebody's trying to show up the dragon who isn't here.
Who would do that? That just seems rude.
I know, right?
I know.
Oh, are you still there, Paul?
I am.
Okay. You just went animated.
Yep, I'm just refreshing my coffee, so.
Gotcha.
Kian looks over at Rat and asks, when we came here to look into the cancellation of the Proving Grounds, we heard that the monsters went missing. Do you know anything about that?
Oh, yes. We lost the spinners.
The spinners are the spiders, right?
Yep.
They were using spinners in the Proving Grounds?
Yes.
That seems like asking for trouble.
And who is going to fight them?
He lowers his head and smiles a little malicious cat smile.
Oh, who is going to fight them? All you pinkies look the same to me, by and large, but let's see, it was O'Dare and I think the retired one. The Lou one. I think he was going to fight them too.
Were those the soldiers that came by earlier?
No.
Do either of those names sound familiar?
I mean, you recognize Clan Lu as one of the great families of the Fallen Kingdom of Alay.
It's a long way to come.
Well, you know, Alay really didn't do well since they're little more than Vulfen.
Do you know where the spinners came from?
Tainwood.
Huh.
And where were they being kept before they disappeared?
In the cages.
Can you show us the cages?
There, that way.
He says, pointing behind him back into the tunnels.
Cecile says, lead on. There's a little comment from behind of, after all, since the arena's been closed for weeks now, you must not be very busy.
He sort of looks back over his shoulder at you like, are you fucking kidding me?
I glance at Rat and then glance over at Cecile and then look down at my own torque. and I say out loud, it seems there's always a way to kick down.
So he leads you back, and there are some branching tunnels with little sort of cells, and you get the sense that the tunnels form a ring underneath the outer, just inside the outer granite walls up above. Mm-hmm. And they're cobbled on the inside and slate floored. And so actually quite, well, cold at this point, but but there are many braziers set into the floor and many torch holders, kind of torch sconces set into the walls. There are even hooks and some oil candle lamps, like brass candle lamps with cunning holes, so that this place could be sort of a merry underground place if it wanted to be.
Yeah, did you say merry?
Merry, yeah.
Oh.
I mean, if you don't, you know, leaving aside that creatures are being imprisoned and then for routine execution. Very festive.
I'm walking alongside Rat, and I turn to him as we're approaching or walking through the tunnels, and I say, given to understand that we're trying to reopen, or at least pave the way for the reopening of the Proving Grounds. Do you know what would need to happen for that?
Oh, are you working here now?
Apparently. Certainly not by my own wish.
He grins, and you can see that someone removed, obviously, someone removed his left kind of prominent fang, and someone else seems to have replaced his right fang with a gold one. Oh, well, I'm sorry, I hadn't gotten word. Are we planning to reopen? I mean, certainly you pinkies will grow bored with killing each other and want to watch yourselves murder creatures. So that was inevitable, I suppose.
He just nods in agreement.
It's just up ahead. They were in these two cells facing each other.
And you can see there are two kind of, you've seen cells with some, with a couple of like beams, and then a kind of a worn, not unpleasant tapestry, but a worn like colorful tapestry hung here and there. That obviously there's some people that either spend some time here or maybe live here occasionally. Mm-hmm. And you've glimpsed kind of, you know, like bedding and yeah, like a chest and some basic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I looted, you get 50 gold. But these are different. There's stout oaken beams to either side. And then there's sort of a tall, slender door that runs up, and it doesn't quite fill the sort of the arch that it composes, but and it's not bars, but it's like woven brass. Mm-hmm. So it's like a long thin beams of brass that are kind of woven together like a basket would be. The work is rather cunning, if a little tarnished with time and possibly other things. The both cells, the doors are closed, and you can see there's a it would be out of reach of somebody inside. But there's sort of like a bolt, and then there's a chain that kind of goes from the bolt to a ring in the floor, so that you can pull the door closed and then hook it to the ring, and the door can't be pulled open, even if the bolt is pulled back.
Mm.
It's very kind of dingy here, mm-hmm. as opposed to the earlier parts of the tunnel. Mm-hmm. Sisyphus does not, he's fine, but he doesn't fit down here too well.
Mm.
So he's kind of like, he's kind of all fours in it.
Yeah.
But it's a very like, whoa, kind of a ride.
Mm.
Oh, this is the best bit. Targo whispers to Sisyphus.
Oh. Oh, Cecil.
What's Targa's and Rat? Do they seem to... What's their... Like, they're both here a lot. Do they seem to acknowledge each other much?
They both have pretty much not acknowledged the other one exists.
Hmm. So... Can we look around?
Absolutely.
The cages. Okay. There. I think that Cecil is going to kind of hop down. He's going to kind of waddle over on his arms.
Okay.
I think Cecil kind of opens the door and he kind of waddles into the area, the cage okay. area.
So the inward cage or the outward cage?
Inward.
Okay.
Can I do another investigation?
Yay!
Of course you can.
I'm going to use my Logos tradecraft. Okay. And I'd like to use the tags Espionage and Perceptive. And I'm going to use my Divination tag of Everything Has a History.
Hmm.
Okay.
I'm looking around at the cages. I'm trying to see, figure out what happened, maybe how they escaped, but I'm also specifically looking for evidence of tampering. I'm looking to see if the spiders escaped under their own power or if the spinners needed something to get out.
So, yeah, cool. Since Everything Has a History is under the Science of Letters, so it should be, you should either be writing something into the thing you're investigating.
Okay.
Or trying to elicit, like trying to like somehow do something to the surface to reveal letters, like that you're sort of like the sort of organizing as a result of your magic.
Can I use the deck? I know like I don't have time or space to do an entire ritual. But for a investigation, could I use the deck?
You could. This sounded like something other than the deck. So I'd love to keep going in that direction.
That's fine.
I'm not saying you can't. You can't. I'm just trying to clarify like what the magic is that you're using to do this.
Yeah. No, that's fine. I think the way I see, so here's how I see Kian do it. Performs this is he enters into the cell,
mm-hmm.
and kind of relying on his keen perception and his kind of deduction, like looks around and looks for the kind of traces of where they were moving around. And every time he kind of connects dots in his head where he's like, oh, okay, this is where the spinner was before the door opened, and this is the thing that was connected to the door, or the way the lock was open. Every time he kind of makes a deduction, he goes to the place of that insight and draws a letter in either the dust or the sand, or if it's on an object, he'll kind of like carve using his fingernail, just very gently, mm-hmm. A rune into it.
So this area is very like grungy and sooty for whatever reason.
So it'd be very easy to kind of
super easy.
Yeah. And then and I think for other people, as they're watching him do this, every time he does it, all the letters that he's done up to that point get a little bit brighter. So like okay. the first time he does it, it just looks like he's kind of scrawling something into the soot. The second time, there's like, oh, did something happen there? And then the third time, it's like, oh, it's actually kind of glowing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Roll.
Okay. Cool. I love it. So you're tapping, everything has a history, tradecraft, or espionage and perceptive.
Yeah.
And you're tapping espionage because?
Sabotage or escape. That seems like that would be in tradecraft from a confined place or whether somebody from the outside was fucking with it, or all those things sound like things that he might have some knowledge of.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
2, 6 plus 3.
Yep.
10. Yeah.
Cool. Alrighty.
So out of curiosity, how high is a success usually in terms of a roll?
So a 10 or higher, so a 6 or lower is a failure.
Okay.
A 7 through 9 is a mixed success. And then a 10 or higher is a success. And then if you roll 12, it's dynamite. And you get extra coolness.
Cool.
And if you roll snake eyes, it's rut-row.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And
surprisingly challenging, it seems, to succeed.
Well, it's average. 7 is average. So the average roll is a success. Is a modified success.
So the
if you're adding modifiers.
So say you roll a 10, but you are activating 2 tags. Does that count as dynamite?
No, that's just a success.
Okay, so if you activate a tag, you are still susceptible to rolling snake eyes then?
You are. Yeah.
So it's okay.
And dynamite, is 2 natural sixes? Is that what I'm getting?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. If you roll a 12, right. It's dynamite.
Dynamite.
Alrighty. It's obvious to you that someone clever was kept in this cage, and they tried really hard and unsuccessfully to get out.
Until they did?
There's no signs of a successful escape.
Okay.
Is there any residue from their bodies or anything?
So that's 2 questions. I sort of gave you the first answer. Do you have a third question since you had a power of 3? Three tags, power of 3.
Wait, and what were the 2 questions that were answered?
I mean, I just sort of gave you the first thing.
Okay.
And then the second thing, you said there's no evidence of escape. And I said no.
Oh, okay. I see what you mean.
You could ask if there's like a residue of power, what might have affected
it. I was going to say, is there any evidence of outside influence? Like not routine.
Yes.
Not maintenance. So
as you carve the last character and like little fairy lights, there's a soft incandescence from the letters you wrote in the room. The way that the light falls through the bars, you can see a series of concentric knots in the soot in the floor and walls outside. Mm. It's kind of like, you know how there's a white wall, and then you turn on like a weirdly colored light, and then you can see like, oh, there were different colors of paint used to paint the wall, or like right. The light shines sideways, and you're like, oh, that was a flat paint, and that was a semi-gloss, and that was a, there's obviously a patch there, and it's like that. So okay, as the incandescence of the letters falls through the mixed apertures of the grate, you can see spaces of, there's a whirling of knotwork
inside the cell.
Coils up. It's actually out in the hallway.
Oh, okay.
Meanwhile,
across the hall. Mm-hmm. So you kind of into the cell.
Uh-huh.
And you find evidence of whoever was in here. Mm-hmm. Was eating like cockroaches, like roaches and worms, and a couple of mice. Because there's some very well picked like bones and a few like iridescent carapaces of some kind of not earwigs, but some other kind of small beetle-y thing. And there is nothing Arkod loves so much as apparently small beetle-y things, because there's a billion of them.
So the insects are a little bit below my notice, because you kind of gotta draw a line somewhere. But
okay,
there's a certain limit to how far like empathy can go.
Oh, yeah, I see.
You know, like. Like, it's like, sure, like, the Buddhist, like, idea of, like, you know, don't hurt anything. But at the same time, it's like, sometimes you got to step on the grass, because that's the only way right. to get where you're going.
Yeah. So, life feeds on life.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think there's some of the mice and some of the larger creatures. And he wants to... one kind of like settle. I think he's going to kind of gather some of the remains. And also he's going to try and.
So it's not remains, it's just bones. And then the iridescent carapaces of beetles.
Okay. So I can't.
And maybe some like casings of earthworms.
Okay. So I probably couldn't do Earth's last rites then.
I don't think so.
They're probably too. There's probably not enough intelligence in those creatures anyway.
Yeah.
There's just not enough left.
I know something about this.
What Would do you know like something to? About?
What do you rat? Know, Claibor?
These things were not eaten by the children of the web. Because they drink their food and leave empty husks behind, not bones.
I assure you, the last denizen of this cell was a spinner, says Rat.
Then there would be an empty insect casing with holes in it where the inside were drunk.
I flip over one of the iridescent carapaces. Are they like tiny? Or are they pretty big?
They're tiny.
They're like tiny. They're little beetles. Okay. Little beetles. No, Dale. This is not the age of trilobites.
I was actually in my head for some reason. I was imagining giant beetles for some reason.
No.
But that's strange, because that alone is strange, because we're talking about really tiny bugs, and the spiders are like human sized, and they ate the bug but left the carapace, like peeling a grape.
Yeah, no, Claiborne's right. That is weird. It's more like. Something devoured them whole.
Or that they were devoured by many kinds.
Say again, Dale.
The ant people would do this.
I was thinking the same.
Strip the bones, leave the wings.
Wait, people? Ant people?
What are ant people?
They are the people that live as ants in the ground, always hungry, always together.
This is not different than ants.
No, I think you call them ants, but I think of them as ant people.
Well, naturally.
Did you never look at people from a high place and compare them with ants?
High people aren't notorious for their ability to fly.
I'm sure I've been compared to an ant before. I go out into the hallway. Oh, sorry. Were you going to say something? And I, by memory, the concentric knots, does it fade as the magic of the letters fade?
The visibility of the knotwork fades.
Before it fades, I'm going to try to trace the designs.
Does Sisyphus recognize the knots? Does this look like... So I think what he would know is if this is a remnant of like the natural powers as the Surin people think of them, or if this is human or god magic. Because if it was of the dragon, serpent, or of the mist, I think he could kind of figure that out. If it was otherwise, then it would probably be a mystery.
Yeah, this isn't smack of the dragon.
Okay.
As I'm kind of drawing out these concentric knotwork, does it look familiar to me as a dream? Keeping in mind that I did work at an academy filled with other dree of other disciplines.
Of course.
Yeah.
You're not sure. So, of course, you know, if people are just doodling or like if a smith is just messing around, you can just kind of make some little interleavy patterns and whatever. But typically the knots are animals, or there's a sort of set of knots that mean things, and this knot seems doesn't seem to be an animal that you can tell, but it seems very orderly, like it's symmetrical, and it has very clear patterns in it, and you don't get the whole thing, so you're just kind of like, you know, you're quickly like, oh, I see, this is like there's like a ring here, but then it sort of goes out into, okay,
as I'm tracing this pattern before it goes dark. Do I see what the original pattern was drawn with?
No.
As in,
you're not even sure it was drawn.
Right. Like it could have just been a visual imprint of something that happened.
Yeah. There are what are called the master sciences that are mostly pursued by crazy people. You have to be very powerful and a little cuckoo to venture into the master sciences. And one of the master sciences is knots.
Right. Mm. What kind of person would know about knots in Tuhal?
Oh.
What sort of dree would know about knots in Tuhal?
Well, the mage hunters do learn a lot about all of the sciences in order to know how to fight them.
How long did the path take to get here to the Proving Grounds? It was 1 mile?
Yeah, it's like a mile and a half.
So not too far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in other words, we could probably go back and talk and then come back.
Yeah, it's like a half hour amble over hill and dale. Don't walk over dale. It's not polite.
So, Paul, I know we didn't really specifically work out the ritual that I would use with the deck.
Uh-huh.
But I think whatever it is takes time. And I think I would like to do that here. I would like to ask a question before we leave.
This would be a bad place to do it, because although you are clean, this is a very dirty place.
But if I were to leave this cell and go upstairs to where the rain has cleaned everything, mm-hmm. that seems like it would be a wonderful place to do it.
Sure. Yeah.
So I think I turn to Cecile and Claiborne. I'm going to be occupied for about an hour. I think after that I'll be heading back. Unless either of you have other things you want to look into while we're here.
Okay.
Are you okay, Matt?
Yeah.
I will play.
He just smiles at Claiborne and proceeds out, assuming he's following.
Do you play Hurley? I have some sticks, says Targa, who's been sitting in the dirt in this soot, getting his gray cloak gray again.
Gray, yeah.
And so what I think how the ritual actually plays out is, it's not so much about personal cleanliness, although I think cleanliness of the place that he's playing is important, but I think it's a trance. And I think that it's sort of like, as he's dealing cards from the deck, a person who's watching it and not really knowing what was going on would still be able to sense that there's some sort of narrative that's being played out with the cards. And the narrative isn't always the same narrative. The narrative is a stream of consciousness. And as he's playing this kind of game of solitaire, or if Claiborne is there, he might actually incorporate another player into the game. But as you play this game, certain bits of the narrative change. And in a way that would be impossible, certain cards and certain combinations of cards come out repeatedly. And so it's kind of like the narrative evolves and the evolution of that narrative as he's dealing the cards. And it takes a long time because it's that evolution of the narrative that actually gives him the narrative that answers his question, if that makes sense. So it's there's a meta narrative of the narratives, and the meta narrative is the answer.
Hmm.
And I think he asks, so first he deals Claiborne in.
Hmm.
And I think Claiborne might be one of the only people he actually trusted beside Mart and possibly Cecile to see him do the whole process. But he asked the question, what am I missing here? And then he begins playing.
Clayborn, are you playing the game too?
John, you mentioned something about the cleanliness of the area being essential or preferable. Mm-hmm. Considering that Clayborn has moist hands made of clay, are you sure you want him to touch your cards?
I think that if Clayborn seats himself down and plays, the way that happens is Clayborn just points. Oh. And Kian takes the card for him. And, you know. So, like, if a trick is going to be kind of like he doesn't, it's not a game where you're playing with hands. All the cards that are being dealt are coming out face up on the playing surface. And I think Clayborn can like point and Kian would be like, aha. And move the trick into like another, like into a pile or move cards around. And that's how that would work.
Okay. So I think this is probably what would happen. You would sit down with Clayborn and explain what you were going to do. And you would at some point fairly quickly realize that Clayborn is not making any distinction between cards that are turned up or down or away from him. Mm-hmm. And you begin to realize that to him, they are only shapes.
Right.
With no images on them at all.
And so before you begin the game, you bring out a pig's bladder full of water. And even though you are quite clean, because it seems important from experimentation, you wash your hands and your arms up to the elbows, and you wash your face. And you see him take off his shoes and wash his feet. And then he settles into a crouch, and I imagine you have a rabbit's hide, like a well-cured rabbit's hide that's smooth on the inside that you lay out on the clean blue granite, which is white. Although it's going blue with the onset of night. Even as you begin the ritual, it's growing cold, although that doesn't bother you especially. The blue moon, Gromgood, is playing a game of hide and seek between the clouds. And so a silver blue light enhances the early evening gloaming as you continue the game, so that everything seems a little cast in shades of gray and blue. And perhaps it isn't so mad that Clayborn attends to the shapes the cards are making rather than the shapes on the cards. Mm-hmm. While this is going on, what are you doing, Cecilophus?
So we're not part of this ritual, correct?
Apparently not.
You could be if you wanted to be, but...
I think the big thing is they were still wondering about the spirits that are said to walk.
Hmm.
And I think Sisyphus is looking for a spirit, and uncharacteristically, he's sniffing. As if he's not looking so much for a spirit, but he's trying to smell some scent of like decay that would represent an area that they had a connection to. So he's looking for the earth that is linked to the spirit rather than the spirit itself.
So in the course of hunting for ghosts, you find a body.
Oh.
There is a... there are several shafts that go down in the earth, and it turns out a couple of the cells have little sort of narrow kind of murder stairways that go down into little storage cellars or other little hidden places. And a couple of them are used as like a midden heap because they're relatively narrow and they're just kind of shafts that go down. But you get to one of them and Sisyphus can clearly smell amid the, there seems to be a natural deposit of lye in the earth down there, or someone has laid lye in there over generations, or possibly both. And so there's a natural kind of cover and a sort of like acidic smell, but even over that, you clearly smell the scent of a body rotting in the dark and kind of dissolving in the dark. So what do you do about that?
So yeah, I'm gonna head down and check it out.
Okay. So there's a sort of, there's like a shaft that kind of goes down into the earth, and then you hunt around and one of the nearby cells does in fact have a little staircase that goes down. So why don't we just have you just for fun make an investigate roll.
Okay.
To see how interesting it gets.
See, I wanted to make a roll, but I wanted to do it once I found the body. But
yes, I have diverted you.
Okay.
From the dead to the living. Or the dead.
Pity.
From the past to the dead.
There'll be plenty of time to get eaten by the dead later.
Yes.
Yay.
All right. So we are going to do... So I probably can't do Earth's Last Rites. But... Where'd that one? I might rework some of the power tags because a couple don't work, but I don't think I have anything that specifically helps with just physical investigation.
Okay.
Most of mine is kind of more the spiritual realm, so it's unlikely he will do very well.
Well, on average.
Mm-hmm. Oh, all right. Well, that died. Hold on a second.
Well, do story tags last typically between sessions, or are they usually only one session?
It depends. But typically they're just for the session.
Which channel were we doing the rolling in?
You can do it in general or in our chat or whatever works for you.
Whatever. Nine.
An eight.
Oh, was there something that went wrong, Paul?
Well, you know there's a body down there, but the smell of lye is strong, and the torturous little hallway is much too tiny for Sisyphus.
Mm. So Cecile has to go down by himself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not dangerous at all. All right. He will continue down cautiously.
Okay. So you make your way easily enough down the steps, mm-hmm. having lived a life before Sisyphus. But on reaching the bottom, you realize there's a few problems. One, it's very dark down here. Mm-hmm. And two, the smell of the earth salts down here are heady and kind of corrosive.
Okay.
And so you can see a shaft of light coming down from above, and you see a sort of crudded up mess with like drippings from the white ceiling mm-hmm. all over it, over by in at the edge of the shaft of light, and there's something kind of gleaming in it, but you can't quite make it out from where you are, so you're gonna have to do something about that.
Okay. Yeah, he's gonna try and make his way closer.
Okay. Right, so there is a toxic environment to danger here.
Okay.
And so you're going to need to face danger.
Okay.
In making your way through this area to get to and get whatever is over there.
Okay.
Sorry to interject. I'm typing up notes. Is that distracting, or can you guys hear that at all?
I can't hear it typing at all.
I can hear a little bit, but it's not bad. It's just kind of background.
Anyways, just...
Thanks, Jack.
So I think two tags that could be helpful mm-hmm. are the of one mind. I think that there is a little bit of sense between the two of us. We can still... Basically, if I kind of yell out and whatnot, I can still have some support from Sisyphus.
But how is that going to help you? Because he can't get to you down here.
Because he knows the Earth specifically. This is kind of his domain.
Okay.
And then I think the Heart of the Dragon, because I am in the Heart of the Dragon. Down here in the belly of the beast, so to speak.
It's more like the epidermis of the dragon, but sure.
Right.
I was
and those are the two that I think apply.
Or what were you going to say, Dale?
I was going to say stomach with dissolving acids and so on.
Oh, yeah. Right. In the what's the thing that makes bile? The pancreas, in the pancreas of the dragon. But that's near, close enough. Great. So roll 2d6 plus 2.
No, I did it wrong. Oh, dang. Oh,
damn.
That's a 6. That was bad.
Plus 2, but it's still right. 5.
That's still, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So you reach out for the bundle, and it kind of what looked like a solid something, maybe with some metal on it, turns mm-hmm. out to have been sort of a slick, kind of gross, globular mass that you sort of put your hand into. Mm. And you kind of jerk your hand back, and there's something attached to it, and you kind of like, oh, and it's like burning, 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 burning. and you kind of stagger back, and... Mm-hmm. And kind of wipe it off on the sort of earth over near the entranceway. Mm-hmm. And there's sort of a foul kind of exhalation of toxic fumes and like buildups of internal gases and but you realize that the thing stuck to your hand that has actually made a burn scar across your hand is a silver bracelet.
Okay.
And you managed to get it off of, unstuck from your flesh.
Hmm.
And so I'm going to give Cecile a status of toxic burns too.
Okay. And then how does one heal?
We'll get to that later. This?
Okay. Unfortunately, later. Sisyphus is good at healing. Cecile is not. Toxic burns two?
Yeah, toxic burns two.
Okay. I made a note of that.
And so we'll talk about healing later, but in terms of afflictions, if an affliction reaches level 5, it's relatively debilitating. And if it reaches level 6, it's life-threatening.
Okay. And 7, you're just dead.
7 is like evaporation.
Okay.
Do you ever take penalties or no?
So it depends. So basically, if a status tag applies, then it applies. So if he was trying to do something small and dexterous right now, I would apply toxic burns too as a minus 2 penalty.
Okay.
To an action.
Okay. Dale, you still awake?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I was just thinking about the system and how that actually makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well done. So you get back up to the top and back up the stairs and Sisyphus is kind of risen up and filled that part of the hallway.
Right.
And is looking sort of stony and menacing. Mm-hmm. And as a total counterpoint to that, sitting, having approached apparently sometime after you kind of stumped down there, Terga playing a game, playing a little game with himself that's called a little game of pick up sticks.
Mm.
So he's sitting kind of spread legged like a child, and he's dropped the sticks between him, and he's using two of the sticks to try and lever sticks up and get them onto the outside of his legs, which is apparently how you win.
Okay.
And he looks up as you approach. Oh. My goodness.
No.
Yeah, no. Oh, my goodness. We don't go down there.
Sorry to see why.
Oh. What's that you have there?
Token from down below. And he just sort of hands it to Sisyphus, who I think kind of cradles it, the small little thing in his giant palm. And then he sort of gets helped up on the shoulder to kind of rest.
Mm.
And so the little bracelet is just sort of dwarfed by the giant Surin hand.
I wonder why Ben would have thrown away a silver bracelet.
Ben? So the curious thing is, can Terga understand Sisyphus?
What do you think?
I think most humans wouldn't bother to understand the old Surin. It would be more common among some of the other races. But if he really is touched,
he does really seem to be.
Yeah, he might get it.
He seems to, I think he seems to understand. Sisyphus is fine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Sisyphus growls and asks him who Ben is.
Oh, Ben, Odair. He's one of the exhibitionists.
What does he exhibit?
Oh, well, riding and spear, mostly. There was a whole story that he would tell about that bracelet that's kind of long-winded and mean. And so it's curious. He must have been done with that story.
Have you seen... did you say it was Ben or Bin?
Bin.
Bin. Have you seen Bin lately?
Oh, no, not for a couple of weeks.
Mm.
He was one of the ones supposed to fight the spinners.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I wonder what Ben's news story is. It's always quiet under the earth, says Sisyphus.
Yeah.
That's a very short story, particularly for Ben.
Oh.
All right, John, what are your tags?
My tags for this would be the deck. The ritual. And
sorry, the ritual is a tag?
Well, I before remember the tag was I can converse with inanimate objects, and we decided not to do that.
Oh yeah.
So instead of that, it's whatever this ritual is that I'm doing with the deck.
Okay.
I'll come up with a nicer tag for that. But mm-hmm. So there's those two, and then I think the serpent is patient because I'm taking the time to do this.
Cool. I like it.
All right.
2d6 plus 3? Oh, that's why I'm seeing them as pop-ups, Matthew, because you're doing it in the Simple Communion instead of the Arkov Slack.
Oh. Oh. Plus 3. Sorry about that.
Oh. Boop.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Claiborne is helping. Could Claiborne do a thing? Oh, but he's not here. Dale's not here.
Okay, so you get 3 questions, but the answers are going to be mysterious.
By the way, I know that in crafting this, I have definitely set this up for this, but I'm going to still be so angry when I find out I'm talking to Merrick. Okay, so question 1. Who conspired to free the spinners? I'm going to take notes.
In spite of their best efforts, even they did not.
In spite of their best efforts, even they didn't?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Hmm. how many were involved?
Four and three and one.
Where can I find the one?
At the other side of that knot.
Alrighty. Those answers were so frustrating, which means they were very good.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that was perfect. I feel like I learned something without being able to articulate any of those things.
Yay! That's good, though.
Yeah, no, it's perfect.
All right, well. As the blue white face, the silver blue face of Brugon gains her freedom from the clouds and stares down directly on the proving grounds. With a long sigh, Kian finishes the game and loads the deck back together. Folding it inside the thick, soft rabbit skin and secreting it in his weatherproof bag.
I mean, I don't want to... I'm sure Dale will have a thing when he comes back, but in my head, the way I envision it playing out is we start, and as Dale described, like, you know, Dale's pointing at cards that are face down. Mm-hmm. But I let that be part of the game. Mm-hmm. And so it fucks everything up. And then by the end of the game, everything actually is now clearly organized. But when I kind of intuit the answer of on the other side of that knot, then Claiborne isn't there. Oh. As I come out of the trance, I realize at some point.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. He walked away. And I think Rat is perched nearby.
Oh, yeah.
Squinting at you and the cards.
Divination. Useful, then.
I know that you probably don't approve. I say gathering the cards up.
It isn't the place of a mere servant and a slave to approve or disapprove of anything, particularly the actions of the wise.
Well, at least you're in the right kingdom for it. Hmm. You're in good company, I say, putting the deck under my cloak.
And so I think we'll stop there.
Okay.
Yay!
Seems like a good place.
Yeah.
So Dale is trying everything, so I assume he's outside right now, mm-hmm. dancing naked under the full moonlight. Which is probably why the internet is not working.
I was very distracted.
Yeah.
It's like, oh. Wow.
Great. So, moments from the game that you liked for your character, or moments of your fellows role playing that sat with you.
Okay.
Just as a sort of like ooh process.
So the introduction to the character was fun. When he was kind of impressed upon by magic that we sort of dispelled a little quicker than usual. I don't know. I like the descriptions of magic in general. our little run-in with the serpent trying to kill one of my characters was kind of fun too. I feel like that's generally how interaction.
Since I'm here,
right? I kind of feel like with Sisyphus and Cecile, that's kind of how interactions with the serpent usually go. It's like, oh no.
I really
you like, you are dragonborn, like I don't need you here.
I really liked I liked how you did your connection with the dragon specifically, like when you reached out to not Taraga near the beginning. I remember that was pretty cool. And I liked the interplay between the dragon and the serpent, like how that there, like even though our characters are harmonious, that
right
our powers aren't.
Yeah,
And I felt like the fact that you know I did something very kind of openly, rather the other way around, I was doing something rather covertly, but I was doing it in the open.
There's Dale.
Oh, did Dale come back?
Yeah.
Hey, Dale.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome back.
Thank you. That only took about 10 minutes.
Glad you made it.
Me too.
So we're kind of doing a wrap up. So we're talking about things from the game that we enjoyed.
Okay.
During the credits.
When I dropped out, Cecile was being injured by a silver bracelet, and that's the last thing I heard. Where did we get after that?
You played a long game with Kian that he seemed to win.
Oh. I am happy for him.
And then you went to see, since all of the water went out of this place, you wondered how the grass was outside and went to check.
Oh.
So, John, you were saying that the you were doing something secret, and then the serpent's power came in, and it made it really obvious.
Or the dragon's power came in.
Oh, the dragon's power came in,
and it blew it all up.
Right,
there was just something about that interaction that felt both harmonious in terms of like our personal relationship with the powers that we work with, and also the relationship between those powers out in the open, which is not great, or kind of volcanic. So I thought that was really neat.
And that's kind of how I think the dragon's power works in general, is it can kind of build underneath the earth and be a little bit subtle. But once it comes into its own, I don't think there's much that's subtle about the dragon's power.
Right.
Because the dragon is, in a large sense, earth and stuff and matter.
Well,
fire.
And fire.
The thing I found interesting
was that really subtle elements.
The thing I found interesting was that if my understanding is correct, like you did the dragon's power, and it was the interaction with the serpent that that set it off. Like it was fine if the serpent wasn't there.
Right. But the serpent and was there, and then
and it's kind of funny because my character, interacts with the serpent, but the serpent is mercurial and very hard to control. So, yeah, I really like that.
Right. And my god is dead.
Yeah, there's that.
But we're still using some sort of power that comes from something. So.
Pretty active for a dead power.
I know, right?
That dead guy, he gets around. It's like Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah.
Sure, in addition.
I also loved Claiborne. I loved the interaction with... Well, I loved when we were both kind of playing in the cards in the end. I liked when you described the his outward appearance after the rain went upward. Mm-hmm. There was something else. It was just on the tip of my memory. I did
like him kind of going around and kind of filling with the dust and everything. Just this kind of idea that Claiborne is change and sort of this collection of I don't know. There's sort of this, like, he is impertinent, permanence, which is kind of fun when both of us are serving established powers that made the world, and Claiborne seems to be something newer.
I'm trying to, there was something Claiborne said
that
I loved. Oh, I'll remember it later, but
I loved how Claiborne treated Tarraga like he made sense.
Yes.
He made perfectly good sense. I don't understand why you guys didn't.
Oh, I, well, this wasn't what I was trying to remember. But one thing I loved was when we talked, when Claiborne talked about the ant people. You're talking about, like, I knew Claiborne enough to be like, oh, you're just talking about ants. But Claiborne then was like, well, haven't you ever looked down and looked at them and just saw people as just ants? Like, I really like that. That was,
well, that, yes. Why should it not work the other way as well?
Totally.
So, late one evening, possibly months or years later, a spirit child finds a new path of limestone available, and a lost granite mother trapped in granite because she was killed by granite, finds her child who was trapped by limestone because was killed by limestone, and find a place to finally meet and find resolution.
And I think after they hug and sort of dissolve into motes of stardust, there's a soft voice nearby. I knew it was going to work out.
Nice.
Alrighty. So does any of that turn into a help or a hurt point for each of you? You each get to generate one for your character toward another character.
I think I hurt John's character. I think my dragon-ness kind of scuttled and kind of disrupted some of his plans. So I think that would be a hurt point.
So that would be you having a hurt point toward him?
I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. That sounds like him having a hurt point toward you.
Yeah, it does sound like that. So I think John gets a hurt point towards my character.
Well, I mean, actually, I think it makes sense both ways. I used my hurt point against you this session, so.
Oh, that's true.
I feel like it's turnabout's fair play. You can have a hurt point towards me. That seems totally fine. I mean, and that's what happened in this session.
Yeah.
So wait, do we get one total or one for each player?
Each player can generate up to one or help point at this point.
You can generate up to one for one of the other two people.
I could see.
So you can give to yourself a help or hurt point toward another character.
Right.
So I have a suggestion. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Dale could have, I feel like Claiborne specifically could have a help point towards John's character, just because he's been dealt into the game. And I can see that coming back later, that he still has a part to play.
Nice. Oh, he left early. Yeah, I like
that. Yeah.
All right. So
he still has a card left to play. So.
So, one of Claiborne's things is the ability to feel and to some sense and understand and to some extent move minerals and chemicals about. And so I'm wondering if a soft clay hand may be able to leach out the remaining acids from the claw of Cecile. And
So we'll start next time with a there's a little sort of training montage that'll be available soon. Or okay, it cool. could be a training montage. It could be anything. Mm. And you can do that kind of a thing during the montage.
Cool. Okay. Awesome.
So I think I would like a... Can we take a hurt point towards each other? Like, can I have one?
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So,
in fact, it's very common.
That sounds right.
So, like, yeah. The in our City of Mist game, the Voodoo Priest and the Angel would often get hurt points toward each other.
That makes sense.
For, you know, reasons. Mm-hmm. We have to save him. I'm trying to save him. No, you're not. You're fucking him up. No, I'm not. You're fucking him up.
I know it. I know you are, but what am I?
Exactly. Alrighty. Well, this is better.
I'm made of glue and you're made of glue. Ah, everything's sticking to both of us. Make it stop.
Oh, no, we're merging.
Ah!
Oh, that wouldn't be
alrighty. Good. Well, thank you all for being here today. I hope you enjoyed our second session, The Spiral.
Yay!
I'm looking forward to our third session, and I'm going to hit stop.